One thing I can remember is when I was a kid, I had a really nice, cool math teacher, and it was basically, well, it was a self-contained class, so like you actually have more time. You can spend more time on this subject instead of, and then just make up this subject the next day or so. But she always did it where it doesn't matter. We always were working in groups and working with the partners.
So in this episode of the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast, we're going to dive in with math moment maker Diana Worthen, who is coming to us from Denver, Colorado. Diana is a grade 10 teacher and is finding that in her 80-minute math block, she's getting to the end of the lesson, and it's now time for the kids to dig in independently, and she's finding a lot of students are shutting down.
Yeah, it's a common problem. And I had this problem too, Kyle, when I was teaching, is that you end the lesson and you think this is the time for them to practice. And then a bunch of them aren't practicing. It's like, well, now what? How do I convince them that practice is important? So we're going to dive into that here with you in this episode. And we brainstorm some next steps on how to overcome this, because this is a math mentoring episode that we've recorded here with Diana. So let's just jump right in. Here we go.
Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program like a strong, healthy, and balanced tree. So if you master the six parts of an effective mathematics program, the impact of the work you do will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you'll get the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying the planning and facilitating of your mathematics program for the students or the educators that you serve. Now, my friends, we are going to dive in here with Diana, but before we do, if you've got a pebble kicking around in that shoe, be it as a classroom teacher, maybe you're a math leader, maybe you're an administrator, maybe you're a coach or consultant, reach out to us at makemathmoments.com/mentor, and we will get you on an upcoming Make Math Moments Mentoring Moment episode, structured quite like the one we're having here today. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/mentor. All right, here we go. And here is Diana. How's it going, Diana?
It's going great. Thank you.
How's things?
Well, now, since it's almost Christmas break, it's a little stressful, but trying to make it through.
I bet. Whereabouts are you coming to us from?
Denver, Colorado.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. I'm sure things are getting a little chillier. And
oh, yes. Now, we did have a warm winter in the beginning, but now it's now cooling down. So it's actually feeling nice now.
There you go. There you go. That's awesome. Well, I'm Kyle. John is right next to me somewhere on the screen here for you. We're delighted to have the opportunity to chat with you and learn a little bit more. So why don't we start? We did see some of what you had shared with us, but why don't you tell us a little bit about you, your context, and the pebble that's kicking around in your shoe lately?
Basically, I've been a teacher for almost 10 years now, and I've taught high school. I usually teach middle school or high school math, and this year is my second year in teaching high school. We have a small group of students. We're using a curriculum called CPM, is by Core Connections. So I'm trying to figure out with high schoolers, especially when they lost the 2 years during the pandemic of their education, and now it's like trying to bring in those 2 years that they lost, but also, you know, getting them back on track from where they're at right now. And it's a little difficult because I'm trying to figure out how to grasp that knowledge and also grasp, get them engaged more. Because with high schoolers, it's the one question is, what do I need this for? If I'm going to college, or why I need to learn this math or whatever job I get, or how is this going to help me in life? So I'm just trying to figure out what I can do to interest, because I try like hands-on activities and stuff, getting them move around. They like that, but it's group of students that I have, because it is a small group of students, but I'm just trying to see what I can do to, they like to be challenged basically. So how I can challenge them with the concept they lost and bring it in with the new concept, really.
So it sounds like to me that you're working with some students. It seems like if I think innately humans do enjoy being challenged. However, a lot of times students, especially students who have had some struggles, oftentimes they like to maybe either hide that fact or maybe they even use it as a bit of a barrier to kind of separate them from the challenge or the way they feel when they're struggling with the mathematics. It sounds like though you've got some students who, although they're having some struggles with the mathematics, that their mindset is still fairly growth mindset, that they do enjoy the challenge, that they do want to do some thinking. So I wonder, what have you done so far in order to try to meet that challenge while also doing the very hard task of trying to also meet them where they are on that journey?
Basically, because with this new curriculum that we have, it's a little confusing. So I've only got to basically about like geometry. So like with angles and triangles, I was able to teach that concept. But basically, I've been doing hands-on activities, or I let them walk around the classroom to they're doing like a gallery walk of creating proofs and assisting each classmate, like collaborating with their classmates and stuff. So with 80 minutes in a class, it's, with this amount of time, it's like basically, it's not really a lot of time, but it's like trying to get them to settle down and then crunch and stuff. So, and plus this year I came into the classroom a little late. So it's trying to pick up the pieces from the few weeks when I started a little late. So that's also, and then trying to get the organization into the classroom also.
Okay. Do you mind helping me? And you may have said this early on, and I may have been trying to piece together some of the other details that you were sharing, but are you the only teacher in the class? So you're teaching the entire group? Or are you coming into the classroom as a sort of intervention teacher?
I'm actually a math teacher for 10th grade, and I teach 10th grade math. We do have two other math teachers, but they have a class right now, so that's why they couldn't join in. I don't really have anybody else that comes in the classroom to assist me. I mean, sometimes I do, but it's not like a daily thing.
Awesome. I'm wondering, what would that then look like? So I got the sense that, yes, you're in there, you're leading the group. You have some students with, it sounds like, varying levels of readiness, right? And you cited COVID as potentially not helping, we'll put it that way, right? Whether that was the reason or whether it definitely wasn't contributing or a positive factor. So you have 80 minutes. What does that look like so far in a day-to-day? And I'm sure that every day isn't exactly the same, but if you could, in general, sort of summarize, what does a math block look like, that 80-minute math block? What's happening? How does it look and sound? And then we can kind of dig in from there, just to give us kind of a picture of what that looks like.
So basically, when class starts, they walk in, they do their warm welcome. So like the bell ringer, they gotta give them 10 minutes for that. Usually during that time period, if I have an announcement about like late work or test or something, I usually do that while they're doing their warm welcome. Then when they're done with their bell ringer, then they write the CLO for the day in their notebook, and then they sit patiently, and then I get to them. Then I'll start the lesson by introducing, like, I usually introduce background knowledge in regards to the lesson. So, like, for example, yesterday we talked about dilations. So yesterday I discussed about transformations, the other different transformations that we already covered, and then also used the history of dilation, like with like pictures and how to, you know, expand pictures, stretch it out, and then like billboards. So I basically use that, and also with a pantograph, like I introduced that, like how they use it back in the day. But so we get on topic about just to grasp their knowledge. And then when it comes to the curriculum, I actually make their notes. So because with the curriculum, it's just a large chunk of stuff. So like I break it down and pull stuff that I feel that they can learn from. And then I make my own notes for my students. So because if they see all this work, I already know they're going to shut down. If they see all, like, especially because it's a lot of words, basically. So I know they're going to shut down with that. But so then, yeah, we just go over the notes. We go one out the end of the first, when I introduce the lesson, I first show them how dilation works. And then I give them another one. Then they do it as a group. not all of them work as a group. Some of them like to work independently, but some do like to work in a group. Then after that, we'll go over it. And then it's usually like right after that, that's when I lose them. Because then when we're going into something else, then it's like, okay, I know how to do this. What is next?
Got it.
Are you feeling like you lose them because it's like the direction part is over and it's like, now it's time for you to do some thinking or some work on your own? And like, yeah, we got this. We're moving on.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, oh, because you're not telling me specifically what to do, when to do it. They think they can sit back and go, hey, I'm done. I've done my duty. Yeah. I followed the teacher's instructions. Now I'm over and I'm not going to do any work on my own. And until you tell me what the next thing to do is, and I can do that. Is that kind of summarized?
That's basically it. Yeah. Because even at the end of class, when I give them their exit ticket, yeah, it's like pulling teeth to get them to do their exit ticket. So they have even 10 minutes at the end of class to finish their exit ticket. And yeah, they don't even do that.
Because so it's safe to assume that they're just not seeing the value to themselves in, say, that part of the lesson and that part of the work. Would you say that's true?
I would say that's basically it. Yeah. Because when they work with me, they're great when they work with me, or if I get them interacting with their classmates, with me walking around and also doing some talking in regards to the lesson, they're great. But then as soon as I said, okay, let's try these on your own, it's out the window.
So now you recognizing that, what would you say so far in that moment, knowing that that time is coming and in that moment's coming where I'm done my examples or I'm done my lesson portion, and I know that they're going to shut down there or they're not going to continue. What have you done, let's say, so far to kind of like either keep the thinking going in that stage or mitigate the experience that you're saying is the struggle?
Sometimes I reroute doing another activity. So to get them to move around and, you know, interact with their friends, or a lot of the times, because they do IXL lessons. So a lot of the times they just say, okay, I'm doing my IXL lessons, so I'm done. So if they're busy, at least doing work, I said, okay, that's fine. Because I still have the students this side of the room that's, you know, wanting to learn and wanting to move on. When I have this side, that's where they shut down. And then it's like trying to bring them both together, really, so I can just teach both of them at the same time. But instead of it just being one or two students, it's like five or six students.
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here, and I've got just a quick message specifically for our district level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
Now, I'm wondering, early on in the lesson, there's a number of things going on. So you're structuring your lesson. First, I want to make sure we're 100% clear here. The way you're structuring your lesson is a pretty common way to structure math lessons. John and I structured our lessons this way for a long time, and we experienced very similar results. We experienced this sort of like, you almost want to stretch out your lesson. Like you look at the clock and you go like, oh, there's 35 minutes left. It's like, if I stop now, the kids will stop now. And now we have 35 minutes of like, what are we going to do? Because I know what the result is going to be when I sort of turn over the responsibility to the students. So I'm wondering, up until the end of that lesson, if we could kind of zoom out on the structure that we used for many years, and it sounds like you're using as well. Is there anything we could change or maybe consider tweaking in that lesson structure that might allow for students to be given more responsibility earlier in the lesson rather than sort of waiting until the end? And so I want to throw that to you and just kind of like see if you have any thoughts on that, or maybe you've tried some things and maybe they had some success, maybe they didn't. But what are you thinking when I share that idea around this responsibility piece and kind of almost like tapping students to be a little bit more in responsible or in control, let's say, of the learning a little bit earlier?
I think that'll be actually, I haven't tried something like that because I'm usually used to the same step-by-step of teaching a lesson. Got a whole group, guided instruction, independent, so forth. So I'm used to doing all that. But if them responsibility in the beginning, because I mean, they already have their responsibility of doing their bell ringer, but it's usually like questions that they already know how to do. So they know they can get that done within a breeze. But when it comes to responsibility of doing work and learning to with stuff related to the concept, then I think that will be very helpful. I'm just trying to see how to give them the responsibility in the beginning of the lesson.
I love it.
Yeah, because I was thinking about that too, is how can you chunk up portions of your lesson to account for maybe mini instruction, try this on your own, mini instruction, or reversed, try this on your own, mini instruction, until the bell, you know, ends. And then by the time that happens, but you've covered your 80 minutes and they got practice embedded throughout in these ways.
And another thought I have for you as well, that could be a good maybe thought, and then we'll also share some potential resources for you to kind of dig in a little deeper with sort of what we're saying here, is imagine, and this would be hard, when we make changes, one thing we have to recognize before we try to make the changes is that small changes sometimes can eventually lead to big results, but sometimes they don't lead to a whole lot initially. Big changes sometimes are faced with pushback right away, right? So when you're thinking about some of these changes and just kind of recognizing that sometimes changes can take time, we can also get humans in general, specifically students who have been learning, say, in this model, right? They've come to know this isn't just a you problem in grade 10. They probably learned in a similar model to this in grade 9 and in grade 8 and grade 7. And all the way through, they've probably gotten, I'm going to say, away with it, because what I mean by that is that they know that we as educators are here because we care about them and we don't want to see them in pain, suffering, not learning, not, you know what I mean, feeling bad about themselves. We want them to have this outcome, right? It's just like if you're a parent with my kids, it's like sometimes it's like I'm like hard on my kids because I want what I want for them, they don't realize they want for themselves yet. And obviously students have this same challenge. So what I wonder is, you've got, say, this time for a bell ringer at the beginning of class. Again, I use that for a number of years. But I wonder if we start to shift when we ask students to start doing some of the thinking, and if we were to ask them to actually do some thinking, and we were to give them something that they can openly think about that's low floor enough for them to think about, instead of it being, say, a practice problem, everyone gets the same answer, we all follow the same steps. If I know the steps, great. If I don't, I shut down at that point. To give them something that they're able to actually inquire about, investigate, even if it's estimating, like getting students to have to do some thinking, even if it's not taxing thinking, right? So some of the strategies that John and I have used over the years is, one is making predictions and estimating early in the lesson. So that's something that can be really helpful, because you're not wrong, you're not right. It's hard to know. The student who's always finishing their math lesson or their math homework first, they're not able to kind of cut it all off because they race to the answer. It's like, no, it's actually an estimate, and there's no way for them to know specifically whether they're right or not. Giving them that opportunity to engage and to think and to share some of their thinking can be a really great step. And then also, if that's working, like that might be a first step. But then if that's working, it's like, what is it that I'm trying to learn today or uncover today? And is there a problem that I can give students up front without me teaching them anything that they can take a good shot at and they can get started? Doesn't mean they have to finish it. It doesn't mean they have to know the algorithm to get there, but that they're able to actually engage in some of that thinking, which also guides you to know what do they really need to know? Where are they? What do they have with them? And what can we build on here so that when I do my part where I want to try to help fill in some of the blanks, it's almost like they've already done some of the thinking. It's not me kind of doing all of the thinking for, say, the first 60 minutes of class and then leaving them 20 minutes to now start thinking, right? For a lot of kids, it's like they were shut down for a long time, right? And they're like, I'm not going to start the engine now. There's only 20 minutes left. So when I give you even just some of those small ideas, maybe small changes in the, hopefully to flip some of that, really what we're addressing is this concept. We like to call it the real flipped classroom, where basically what we're saying is like, how can we give more responsibility to the students earlier in the lesson and save our responsibility to help clean up the mess? Instead, because what we do traditionally is we try to clean up a mess that hasn't actually happened yet. So we come in and we go, don't open the fridge carelessly. Don't grab the milk with one hand. Grab the can because the milk might spill. And we tell them all the ways to make sure that we avoid the milk from spilling, but they haven't spilt the milk yet. And we do this in math class quite a bit, when in reality, if we kind of pause for a second, we go, what if we let them spill the milk in this lesson? Give them a little bit of opportunity, a little bit of time. And then not only does that tell us where there's a mess to clean up, it allows me to be more targeted. So they've taken responsibility to do some of that thinking. And then I take the responsibility and I have to build this trust with them that they know that I will make sure to help them clean up the mess after. But it will take time because at first they're probably going to push back on you, right? They're going to go, whoa, 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 whoa. You're supposed to teach me for 60 straight minutes so I know what to do. Even though up to this point, every time you do that, I don't actually respond. I shut down. But that's what they're going to do. And that's what they're going to try to do. But if you can kind of build that out of them and almost like lure them in to doing a little bit of that thinking earlier in the lesson and you doing more of the thinking maybe later, then you can start to see a dynamic slowly shifting.
That does make sense a lot. Yes. Because like you said, because they already know the routine that like the last 20 minutes of class, like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, it's break time in their mind, right? They're like, I've had break time at the end of math class for 10 whole years since grade one. I've been doing this. The teacher stopped talking and I'm done. And in reality, we're going, who did all the thinking here? It sounds like Miss did all the thinking today and you did it for good reason. Again, I want to make sure we're clear here. You're doing that because you care about kids and you're going, this is how I was taught, and I guess I've got to do it that way too. And it worked for you. You made it through, right? But for a lot of students, I'm going to argue that they might not have made it through, even though they were sitting in the desk next to me when I was a student.
So yeah, I definitely like that. And like you said, give them the reins, because then it can actually help me see what they actually know how to do and then challenge them themselves, giving them the reins of the lesson by trying the lesson out on their own. And because who knows, maybe they do know this concept, and also give them something challenging too with that. So yeah, that sounds, give them the responsibility. Yeah, I like that idea. I already have like ideas in my head of what to do.
Perfect. What would you say is your immediate next step if you're going into the classroom tomorrow, let's say, or later today? What would be your next step or your first action item?
Well, first I would have to plan this, but my first step, of course, still get them to wake up when they walk into my classroom. And I'll still do the bell ringer, but then also I'll continue with the responsibility because when I give them their notes, then that's when they can actually work together and work as a team to come up with ideas how to, for example, like with dilation, come up with ideas of how they can dilate the shape and basically you have them basically communicate with each other how they can make it. If I give them a scale factor and how they can make it bigger and stuff. So just like you said, like give them the responsibility of working it out themselves, really. And then, like you said, just come around and make sure everybody's okay and their area is clean and stuff. And then just give them their floaties when they're swimming just a little bit at a time. So,
yeah, I love that. I love that. It's like we don't have to throw the safety devices away in the garbage can. It's like we just hold off a little longer, right? We're like, are they really choking? Are they really drowning?
Right. Exactly.
And it's like, ah, they are. Okay, now it's time for us. But until they're really drowning, right, we want to make sure. I think that gave me a great visual. The floaties is a great visual of for many years I was there and I had them all in there. It was like almost like, are you even swimming or are you just floating on the pool? Because I've got all the mats out there and everything there to make sure that you don't potentially have your head go underwater at all, right? So that sounds like a massive takeaway. We appreciate you taking some time here today. And can we ask you one question that we ask on every episode of the podcast that we usually do at the beginning, but we didn't know it was going to be a podcast episode? Can we ask you, what do you think is the math moment that comes to mind for you personally? It can be through your own experience as a student, but it could also be something else in life. When you hear math class, what sort of moment comes to mind for you? It can be positive or negative.
One thing I can remember is when I was a kid, I had a really nice, cool math teacher. And it was basically, well, it was a self-contained class. So like you actually have more time. You can spend more time on this subject instead of, and then just make up this subject the next day or so. But she always did it where it doesn't matter. We always were working in groups and working with the partners. So basically we had to lean on each other. And two activities she did. One was we had to build a bridge out of toothpicks, and we have to see how many bricks can hold this bridge up and without breaking. And I think I was like in sixth or seventh grade. So that was a lot of knowledge and real world situation, really. And another one was where she actually made us seem like adults and we were running our own business. Like I remember I had a daycare center. So I was billing everyone their weekly daycare amount and stuff. And then we had cars. And then if we had a boat, and then we had to make payments. So then that's really how I actually, well, really learned how to budget money in like my life. But I remember that class when I was younger. I was very prepared for the real world. So
I love it.
Thinking about those experiences, do you see how maybe the fact that you said these things when these are the first things you thought about math class? Do you think those experiences had any effect on the way you teach class now?
Hey there, Math Moment Makers. Are you a dedicated listener? Like, I'm talking, have you been listening for a couple months, maybe even a couple years? Well, if you haven't taken a moment to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean so much to us. It'll take you under 1 minute so that you can help more educators see and experience the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Do us this huge solid. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And here is today's episode.
Oh, yeah, I think so, because I always want to get my students like engaged with each other and stuff and have them working with each other. So I always try to do a project in my many years of teaching. I always do a project each quarter, each 9 weeks. I always have a project for my students to do. Last year, even though I taught science last year, but they were actually the teachers and they had to come up with their own lesson plan. They had to write a lesson plan. I gave them a template. They had to come up with their own CLO and everything. And find the standards. And I taught eighth grade last year, and they actually had to teach the lesson as teachers. And so they had a kick of that. My students really enjoyed that. So they actually were got to be in my shoes for a little bit and saw how hard it was. So, but oh, yeah. And then have the students. And because one thing I do remember for when I was doing those years when I was in school, testing, state testing wasn't really the like, talked about a lot. Like we knew we had to do it, but it wasn't like the main thing on our mind, because right now it's like, okay, we got to do this because we have to get ready for state testing, or we got to crunch this in because this is going to be on state testing. So I think that's one issue is that's what's making teachers get burnt out, and also students, you know, giving up because the first thing that they are notified as soon as they get into the classroom at the beginning of the year is, okay, we got to cover all this before March for state testing. So,
right.
Yeah.
One thing I must say, I want to thank you for sharing the math moments there that you remember. And I wonder, you had mentioned your big takeaway already here. And I wonder if you can use those two moments as sort of your inspiration on like, how can I do a little bit of that every day? It doesn't have to be the entire time, but if you can do a little bit of that and do it early in the lesson, I feel like it's going to really help you with flipping that class around and really starting to push who has the responsibility. Because your moments that you remember were moments that your teacher gave you responsibility. Your teacher gave that to you. But I'm going to also guess that there was probably times where it looked a lot like what you had described in this particular episode. But if you take that and you go, if that was a moment for me, this is why we named the podcast Make Math Moments, right? So it's all about how can I do a little bit of that and still get the result that I'm hoping for, still get to enough of the standards and still make a good effort here. Because ultimately, if I can get more of my students to engage in my material, engage in the learning earlier in every lesson, I'm going to actually cover more because students will have been doing more of the thinking. And we have a couple episodes we'll share in a follow-up email with you. But one of the episodes that I think would really be helpful for you as kind of a takeaway is episode 158, where it's called Don't Ditch Your Lesson Model, Reverse It. So that one is a scenario where we're talking about how we can take what we're currently doing and not throw it all out, but just think about how we structure it. Think about the order and how we do that. And then there's a second episode, episode 141, and that is called The Transition from Gradual Release to Problem-Based Learning. And I think that could be a really valuable one for you or anyone listening to the podcast who might also be challenged with some of the same challenges that you shared with us here today.
Most definitely. Yeah, I'll definitely look. Usually I listen to y'all's podcast during my lunchtime. So it's like meditation or like I turn the lights off in my classroom. And yeah, that's meditation for me.
Awesome.
I love it. I love it. Well, we're so thankful that you had reached out and we had the opportunity to chat with you here today. Definitely keep in touch with us. And hopefully, if it's okay with you, we'll follow up with you in 9 to 12 months and kind of see where you're at, see where your head's at, where are the gains, where are the new pebbles emerging. And hopefully we'll be able to hop on for another catch-up call.
Awesome. Awesome. Sounds good. Thank y'all so much.
All right. Have a great day. Take care.
Well, there, folks, there you have it with Diana. We just got off the call with her, and I said this at the very top of the episode that this is a common issue that I think a lot of teachers are struggling with when you're teaching, say, that lesson, like I was for a long time, teaching that lesson up front, talking about helping with preloading strategies, and then having those set times that says, hey, from this time to this time, we're going to do this lesson chunk altogether, and then from this time to this time, there's practice, and that practice is individual practice. And when it happens every day like that, you see what happens. And it's happened to me is that kids will take that time to go like, I think I'm good. And then you're struggling because all of a sudden now they might be distracting someone else. And the class kind of becomes a little bit unruly at that point, or like Diana said, is this, we lose them. And I hope we gave you some takeaways here to how to restructure that class. And for me, when you think about the six areas of our math classroom tree, I think about the branches of the tree. What are the pedagogical moves, the classroom strategies that are teacher moves that we're doing? And specifically, how are we structuring the general timeline of our lessons to maximize engagement, maximize thinking? We talked to Diana about how to kind of do a little bit of that restructuring. And it's small steps, right? There are some small steps we suggested here to do that restructuring to give her some wins so that it can lead to some other wins down the road. It wasn't a massive overhaul of her lesson plan. You'll notice that we didn't say you should throw everything out and go task-based lesson the whole time. And are you build in vertical non-permanent surfaces? It was a small kind of next step for Diana. It's something that she could get a win out of, which can carry forward the next win and the next win. It will lead her down that path. So if you're a district leader listening right now, think about those small wins for the teachers and think about where they are on their journey. Instead of kind of jumping from one side of a spectrum to the other, We have to kind of help our teachers realize those small wins and celebrate those small wins for them to continually take the next step and get those wins. Kyle, what about you? Where do you think the tree hit here today?
Yeah, I love it. What you just said is kind of a nice segue into the sun, soil, water of the tree. And that's all around mindset and beliefs. And this is on both sides. This is on the educator belief, right? We have this belief that we need to come in and we need to be, I love the floaty sort of analogy in the pool, right? It's like, we need to be there as the lifeguard. And we're like, we're going to train you on how to swim, what to do, what not to do, how to jump in. Don't jump in over here like this. Don't do this, do that. And we feel that that's our responsibility as an educator. But in reality, our opportunity that we have is to engage students and give them the opportunity to engage in learningful or in meaningful learning situations, right? In contexts. So giving them that opportunity. And in the math moment that Diana shared, it really sort of highlighted that what she remembers as being a memorable, positive, memorable moment from her math class actually was exactly that, was when she had the responsibility, when she was given the opportunity to try and fail. We can be there to help clean up that mess. And then also, as you were saying, John, those small little steps are going to be really important, because we also are going to have to shift the mindset and beliefs of our students, right? Those beliefs that those students have and the mindset that they have about what it means to learn and do mathematics has been influenced by the environment, the educational environment. So if for the past 10 years, students have been learning math in a certain way, if they've been doing math class in the way that Diana described, in the way that John and I were teaching for a number of years, this is going to be a work in progress. And it's also worth mentioning to students that you're trying to make this change, right? We don't want to come in and just pull the rug and sort of go like, now there's no more floaties for you in the pool. We need to make sure we're taking these steps in small pieces and making sure that we're letting the students know that this is our goal and this is our intent, and that the intent is to do good. We want to do better here for them. And then if students are with us on that journey, that transition will be easier and easier. So what resonated with you? We'd love it if you would share however you choose. We love hearing from you. But one thing we're going to ask you to do in particular is to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. So wherever you're hearing me say this right now, hit the pause button, or heck, let it keep running. You can do this while the podcast is playing. Leave us that rating and review. You don't know how helpful this is in helping us to reach a wider, larger, Making Math Moments That Matter community listener. We need your support in order to be able to continue providing this opportunity for all of us to grow better.
Also, don't forget, this particular episode only occurred because Diana reached out to us and to talk to us about a pebble that's currently rattling around in her shoe. And we want to hear from you. We want to talk to you about what pebble is rattling around in your shoe. Because if it's rattling around in your shoe, it's rattling around in maybe Diana's or another teacher's. And just us talking about it and sharing it with the Math Moment Maker community, it can help another teacher avoid that issue or hit that issue head on and be ready for it when it does occur. So we want to talk to you. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/mentor, makemathmoments.com/mentor. And let us know what the pebble is, and we'll hop on a call here and rattle it around and see if we can shake it loose.
Show notes, resources, transcripts, and all kinds of goodies are over on the website, makemathmoments.com/episode267. That is makemathmoments.com/episode267. Well, until next time, my Math Moment Maker friends, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And high five for you.
If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, a principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training and accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages to start this free training.